earth, and sky.
Welcome to Clear Voices. I'm Lindsay Patterson. It's hard to imagine life without electricity. When you flip a light switch, it's supposed to come on. But behind the scenes is a massive network of power plants and transmission lines which comprise the electric grid. The U.S. electric grid has a rich history, and it's also vulnerable, as anyone who's been stranded in an elevator during a blackout knows. Earth and Sky's Jorge Salazar spoke with Philip Shuey, a physicist and science writer with the American Institute of Physics. Shuey's the author of The Grid, A Journey Through the Heart of Our Electrified World.
Dr. Shuey, welcome to Earth and Sky.
Thank you.
In your book, The Grid, A Journey Through the Heart of Our Electrified World, you describe the electric grid as almost alive, as some enormous nervous system, and occasionally living things don't behave quite as we expect. How ready are we now for the increased demands that people put on the electric grid?
Well, first of all, why is the grid as large as it is? We should talk about that just for a moment. It's as large as it is and stitched together because of the basic physical fact that electricity has to be made moment by moment, and just enough of it made to exactly meet the amount of electricity that's needed by all the customers. And if this gets a little bit out of sync by the utilities being linked up with each other, they can help each other from moment to moment supply a slight imbalance. One company might be making a little too much or a little too little. So first of all, that's why all the grid companies are linked together. The downside of that is that when an emergency comes and, say, a power line goes out and there's a surplus of energy, a big splash of energy that has to go somewhere, there's the danger that this might shut circuit breakers off here and then the next company over and the next company over, and we would end up with a cascade blackout such as we had in August of 2003. That dilemma of meeting the electric load moment by moment by moment, never can the electric grid be off. It has to be on and meeting demand, matching up demand with production every moment. But as if that weren't hard enough, the power load keeps increasing by 2% each year. And it's a gigantic problem to meet those needs as the years go by. Also, to try and minimize the amount of carbon dioxide that we send into the air, it's a continuing problem. And Congress, I think, hasn't sufficiently addressed this issue of how we can make more energy as the years go by and yet also try and limit the increase in electric load. We all do want more appliances, and it's like being on a diet. We'll be better off for it if we can use a little less electricity and still get the quality of life we want.
What inspired you to want to study the history and the origin and everything about the electric grid in the United States?
Well, I was writing a different sort of book, a book about the forces of nature. And what really got me interested was how knowledge, physics and chemistry and biology were applied in a practical sense. And just then in the book, I was describing how the electrical grid came into existence. And that, it seemed to me, was a more exciting topic to write a book on. So that's how I started writing. And it ended up being a complete history of the electrical grid from the 19th century right up until now. And as far as I can tell, it's the first complete history of the electrical grid meant for a general reader.
How did it start?
Well, electricity has been known ever since the ancient Greeks and Chinese. And in the early 19th century, Faraday hit upon the phenomenon of electrical induction, how magnetism can change electricity and electricity can change magnetism. But the real grid proper gets started with Thomas Edison. He was a genius inventor. He had invented the phonograph and had built several devices that helped the telegraph industry along. The electrical grid wasn't the first electrical industry. There was, after all, the telegraph and the telephones. But what he did in the late 1870s and early 1880s was invent the whole system. He invented the light bulb, but then he invented the whole infrastructure that you had to have to use electric light bulbs, meaning the wires in the ground, the generators that cranked out electricity, the meters that would determine how much energy you were using, and so forth, winning permits from the city of New York, manufacturing equipment by the thousands. He was the man, almost single-handedly invented the electric grid in America and actually in the world.
Most people don't really think about the electric grid. I know I don't. I just flip switches and magically things seem to come on.
Well, that's one of the main reasons for the book. We generally don't think of electricity until a blackout, until the electricity goes away. It's like being a fish in the middle of water. A fish doesn't really grasp the concept of what water is, and I think we're swimming in electricity, so we don't usually see it. So I have to remind the reader what it is and how they're using it or misusing it. And there are plenty of tips in the book on how to recognize how we're using electricity. Yes, we do need electricity. It helps improve our lives. It helps save lives through medical operations and laser surgery. It helps the production of food. But there are many reasons for supposing that we're using too much electricity, and I am at pains to tell the reader how he or she can enjoy just as good a quality of life, but using less electricity. And that includes energy-saving tips, naturally. I couldn't write a book about electricity without talking about how you can save electricity. And two or three of those tips are to replace every one of your incandescent bulbs in your home with a compact fluorescent. Depending on how many lights you have, that could save you as much as 10 or 15 or 20% off your electricity bill. Another is to put all of your computers and heavy-duty electrical appliances on power strips. You might notice that when you turn a computer off at the end of the day, you'll see a little red light glowing. That means that power is still running around inside your computer, holding the settings for the computer or your home entertainment system, and you don't really need those. You can shut those off if you plug your devices into a power strip and then plug the power strip into the wall. And then when you leave the room at the end of the day, turn that off. How much does this add up to? Again, depending on how much stuff you have, it might be 10 or 20% of your energy bill. Electricity is, if you consider what we're doing to the atmosphere and the ice caps and glaciers around the world, you can think of electricity as a great moral crusade. Every time you insulate your home or you use these power strips or compact fluorescent bulbs, you're reducing your electric load on the local grid and on the world and on the atmosphere. So if you want to think of it morally, you can, and maybe you should. So that's another mission of the book, is to show how electric use translates directly into tons of carbon dioxide sent into the atmosphere and how we all have a responsibility to change that.
I'm glad that you talked about what individuals can do to lighten the load on the electric grid that we all share here in the U.S., and there are other grids all over the world as well. Now, what about what industry can do to make things hum along smoothly and efficiently?
Yes, you're right. There are many different players in the electric world. There are the consumers at home. All of us get our power bills and have electricity coming into our home. But, of course, the utilities have a major stake in how electricity is made. And for more than 100 years, the way big power companies made money was to sell as much electricity as they could. And it sort of crimps their style, their approach to business, if we or society suggests that maybe using the most electricity or selling the most electricity isn't the best thing we should be doing now. Sell electricity, yes, but no more than you actually need. And in fact, let's try and cut back on our electric usage. Have all the good stuff, the appliances, the quality of life we have, but just use less electricity to do it. And as the years go by, we as a nation are using less electricity, but we need to speed up that process. And there are things that companies can do or states can do. States can, in writing their regulations, which govern the way energy companies operate, can reward companies that show their customers how to use electricity. That seems like a contradiction, getting a company to sell less of its product. But if you can shape the way the profit margin for that company to encourage thrift in their consumers, then they're doing a good thing. I think the ultimate source of responsibility and leadership here is with the federal government. We can't go on sending greenhouse gases into the air in the act of making electricity. Well, actually, we will. We'll have to keep doing it because burning coal to make electricity is still the number one way of generating power in this country. But there are ways we can reduce carbon dioxide emissions. And again, companies should be encouraged to do that. Federal regulations should encourage companies to find thriftier and greener ways of making electricity. So government's responsible, the electric companies are responsible, and the homeowner should be responsible also. We're all in this together. We all breathe the same air.
What is the future of the grid? What's next as far as how it's going to change to respond to people's needs?
One change that will be coming is that a carbon tax will be imposed on the emission of carbon dioxide from large plants and small plants too. But I think this will encourage more strongly than ever the use of smaller grids, small, compact, efficient machines. The problem with solar panels and wind farms up until now is that even though there are great benefits to making electricity that way, if you just look at the cost of producing electricity, but the cost per kilowatt or kilowatt hour, these forms of electric production are rather expensive. Solar cells and wind turbines have been around for a long time, but they've always been rather expensive and have occupied only a niche market. But I think as we start imposing these carbon taxes, which aren't meant to be punitive exactly, they're meant to recognize the fact that when you send greenhouse warming gases, the kind of gases that help to melt glaciers and put Florida under the Atlantic Ocean, there has to be a price paid for that. You expect to pay for garbage collection when you put the garbage out in front of your home. You don't just throw it in the street in front of your house. Well, the same thing is true for making electricity. Society can no longer afford to just dump pollution and greenhouse gases into the atmosphere without paying some kind of price. Now, that will make the cost of coal-fired electricity more expensive, and that will make some of these other methods, cleaner methods, more viable. You can go to a store and buy solar panels and have them installed on your roof, and you'll be making money and maybe even sending electricity into the grid someday. That day is coming, but it will be more prevalent still when the price of making the solar cell comes down, maybe through mass marketing, and the price of the other mainline electricity gets more expensive.
Dr. Shuey, I appreciate you taking this time out to speak with me. Is there anything else you'd like to share today with the public or the listeners of Earth and Sky?
I guess my book is, in a certain way, meant to be a sort of electrical Walden, Henry David Thoreau's book of the 1840s about life in America and confronting technology then. That's what this book, if I may say so, attempts to do, is to not just chronicle the history of a particular technology, electricity, but how we use it and why we use it and how we can do better, use that tool more efficiently to make this a better world.
That was science writer Philip Shuey, author of The Grid, A Journey Through the Heart of Our Electrified World, speaking with Jorge Salazar. This has been an Earth and Sky presentation.
We're at earthsky.org.